Hello, and welcome to Girls Gone Canon Reads, A Song of Ice and Fire, episode 221. Arya 1 in A Feast for Crows. I am one of your hosts, Chloe.
And I am another one of your hosts, Eliana. And yes, are you ready for the Arya Bravos, Arya Feast chapters? My favorites.
Oh my god, here we are again at the best A Song of Ice and Fire book in the main five books of the series. Wow, a love letter from George R. R. Martin to me, Chloe. He wrote this for me.
He wrote
you
it for
you.
You
all are just lucky enough to listen, and I'm going to let you listen to A Feast for Crows. You're lucky. Very lucky. Also, I was looking through the POVs and, like, technically, this is the second to last feast POV we get.
That's fucked up.
At least until Wind's Winter. Oh, wait, no, Feast POV. Wait, no, Feast the book. Fuck, no, it doesn't work that way.
If the Winds of Winter comes out, they're not going to be Feast POVs. They're just, those are Winds of Winter POVs. That is a new era.
I guess A Feast for Crows just lives in my heart forever. Wow, that's crazy.
We're just completely done with A Feast for Crows. That's wild.
We're going to be someday. You never know when. I mean, depending on all the magic in the air and hot D and time and how it goes in a linear line. We could maybe even beat the boys over at Nauticast one more time to A Feast for Crows, because yes, they are still in a storm of swords. As of today, March 13th, the boys are in a storm of swords, and we're lapping them with A Feast for Crows, the best book, once more. We could do it again, maybe. We'd have to, you know, look at our schedules. You never know. We could just put out all the episodes.
A chronological reread podcast that is only of A Feast for Crows. It's not the worst idea, actually. It's not a bad idea.
In the words of a hero of mine, Tyrion Lannister, ask me again in 10 years, Eliana.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. I guess we're going to have to, right? Like, is Wind's going to be out then? I don't fucking know.
I hope so. May the historians write this down in 2024. Well, welcome back to us. And Eliana, there's this thing you always say. Are you going to say it during the next POV?
When we do Arya Stark again? As Warren pointed out, yeah. I'll do this for Warren. We'll just redo all of Arya all over again. That way we don't run out of feast chapters.
You're saying we could feast again and again.
Yeah.
I love it. Look, got a little housekeeping up top. First things first for patrons. Patrons over at patreon.com/girlsgonecanon. CANON. They have access to lots of stuff. If you're in the Stranger tier and above, you get bonus episodes. Every month we put out a bonus episode. This month, part 4 of The Hunger Games, the first book by Suzanne Collins in the trilogy, it is coming to a close. We have wrapped it up. It will be out for you by end of month. Part 4, The Victor, which is actually part 2 of The Victor. We did part 1. That was last month. Keep up. We split it. We got a little ambitious. But yes, we've wrapped it. We'll come back to Catching Fire. And probably in the next handful of months, you'll see something about it hit your feed. You never know. And also Mockingjay, maybe towards the end of the year. I feel like we'll see. We'll see if we get there. We will come back, though. We are going to take a little break.
Yeah.
And come to George's Worlds again.
I mean, like, I would guess, right? Probably Hunger Games. I don't know. Catching Fire maybe in the summer. We'll see. So you feel. Because as all of you know, big things are happening this summer. And by that, we mean House of the Dragon. I assume you all know this. But
yeah. And we'll have some news to come for our House of the Dragon coverage. Because we will be back to talk about Fire and Blood, only on the TV screen.
Yeah, we're just waiting for news from them, you know? But
please, the podcasters are dying. Please tell us, please.
Yeah, I need to plan. Anyway, so between now and June, let's talk about some of what you can expect on Patreon, because we've kind of got this figured out, right? So I'm sorry, everyone, we're abandoning my Mercy idea. It was like a really good idea for, I don't know, 2 weeks, but we thought about it. Mercy just makes more sense in April. Sorry, everyone. And then we will probably come back to Bravos in May. And who knows? May could bring a lot of different things. It may. And...
I mean, yeah, actually, Eliana, I think we're starting a new POV, like at the end of April, possibly. We will have a couple bonus episodes from patrons released in April, May-ish, just to kind of appease and let you know what you're missing out on over at patreon.com with our friends. But we have a new POV coming. Get ready. And who knows? It could be long, could be short. I think we got a couple guests coming in the future, too. I can't wait to announce them. They're some pretty good friends, so couldn't do it without them.
Yeah. So it's all a mystery. But anyways, let's talk about what else is happening on Patreon. For example, if you're in the Thunder tier and above, you get special access to our Discord. And March 24th, this Sunday, if you're in real time, if you're listening to this in real time, is going to be the March happy hour / brunch. Brappy yeah. hour.
Yes, affectionately known as Brappy hour. I'm excited. It's from 2 to 4 ET PM. That's Eliana time, not Eliana time. I don't know. I don't know how to classify it, but it's ET, whatever that means to you. And probably play some games and chit chat. And, you know, last month, oh my God, I need to tell you, I had the most euphoric experience drawing. We were all doodling during brunch last month in the Doodle app on Discord.
Oh, yeah.
We were all jamming. I made a little sandworm ahead of Dune Part 2. And Discord has like a little whiteboard you all can just doodle on. And I don't know. It was just a fun time. I had a really, it was just vibes. And I really appreciated that. So I think March is going to be fun. I think we'll also vibe in March. And then coming
really
up
in April. Yeah.
Big vibes in April. Our brunch will be on 420. Blaze it, 2 to 4 p.m. ET. This is not encouraging you to come blazing it actively that I can see it.
We would never encourage drugs.
Never. Drugs are not encouraged in places.
It's illegal, probably.
In some places.
Yes, we would never encourage you to do crime.
Do not eat the shade of the evening. Come hang out. It's just a fun space. People chat about nerdy stuff, life stuff. Do chores, hang out. We've got friends that do like their meal prep and just chit chat. Friends that do their chores and chit chat.
It's me. Eliana's I'm the friend. Chores. Oh man, there was an embarrassing time. I was like, "What is this stain?" I was like, "Oh god, this is not clean. This is not clean."
And you know, it's exciting. You don't have to be on video. Everybody, you know, you can come be on voice if you want and chit chat too.
Yeah, for sure.
Eliana, you included. No, I'm just kidding.
Some people do day in the life stuff on, I don't know, Instagram, TikTok. Like, this is what I did in my day. And they give you snippets of the chores. No, you're getting fucking live. You're getting real time. And that's
maybe,
probably...
Maybe, like, we should just reserve that and doing makeup and stuff. Like, GRWM oh my God. GRRM. We look forward to having brunch with our patrons both this month, 324 from 2 to 4 p.m. ET, and next month, 420 Blaze It from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. ET. See you there. Have some fun. Have some laughs. Have some euphoria. It'll be a blast. Okay. Eliana, this is it. It's our 221st lightning round.
Well, I've never done this before, but here's how I hear it works. We tell you what happened between the last Arya chapter and this one. And honestly, a lot of things happened because, like, the last one was at the end of another book, and we're just not going to do all that. We're going to just tell you from the top of A Feast for Crows, because it's the only book that matters.
Yes. We're going to start off at the prologue today. You know all about that Storm of Swords. So, first off, in the prologue, in Old Town, we get an introduction to intrigues at the Citadel.
The Prophet. Aaron Greyjoy believes in democracy.
The Captain of Guards. Eriyo Hota shows us Dorne. Doran locks up the Sand Snakes.
Cersei won. Jaime doesn't want Cersei's handjob. Tyrion escapes.
Brienne won. In Duskendale, Brienne seeks a girl of 3 and 10.
Samwell won. Please see Jon 2, A Dance with Dragons. Jon 2, A Dowida.
And that brings us to Arya 1, A Feast for Crows. Arya is smuggled into the city of Braavos. I want you to know, again, this is the 221st lightning round, so...
Ah, fuck.
I'm glad you got to read the John to Adelwida. That I thought that was some of my best work yet. Samwell
was some
one,
of your best.
John
yeah.
to Adelwida.
Yeah.
It is. But yes, we're here.
What if we had just released the John 2 episode in lieu of that Sam 1 episode?
That would have been quite a fucking,
that'd been funny.
Fucking joke.
Oh, we should mash them up together, just like how people mash up and do like a Ball of Beasts or the Boiled Leather edition, sort of, you know, Feast for and Dance. We can pick random points within each episode and just put them in, splice them together.
I mean, actually, let her cook. We're going to come back to that someday, but...
It's an interesting idea. I'm not against it.
Let's open up Arya 1 in A Feast for Crows. Faint and far away, the light burned, low on the horizon, shining through the sea mists. It looks like a star, said Arya.
The star of home, said Danyo. What a beautiful opening. Here we are at this new place, new book for Arya, new place for us, but not really. And... they are navigating, right, on a ship going home, and they're calling it the Star of Home, and it makes me think of the North Star, right? Or just the stars in general and how they're used for navigation, especially when it comes to ships. That's how people used to get around, because, I mean, it is wild. I mean, how people did that, it is wild. Like, I understand in concept how it works, and people still do it. Honestly, knowledge is amazing. And in this same book, we also get a couple of other things about stars, right? Like, Arianne looks at Nymeria's star and is like, that's my star. And I'm like, I don't know, girl. But it's reminiscent of Nymeria and the 10,000 ships, of course, which is something that Arya really likes. And then also later on in a few lines, Arya's going to be thinking about, like, wishing about home. And it makes me also think about wishing upon a star. But coming back to this North Star idea and that sort of being like a guidance and how you navigate in these two books, right, in Feast and Dance, we have a lot of people journeying far from their homes. A lot of people are going elsewhere, like Sam leaving the wall. And for Arya, I feel like this hope of a star that points back to north, right? In a way, her home is the North Star. She wants to get back there. That's where she's trying to navigate back to.
I love that you called this out, because it makes me think of, like, I mean, I know there's, like, the idea in a lot of indigenous cultures of, like, the great spirit in the sky or the great chief in the sky, right, as a northern star, like Polaris.
Oh.
But I think of, like, Shakespeare's sonnets too, right? He has a sonnet that I think is like sonnet 116. It's love is the star to every wandering bark whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. And, you know, as the thing that, like, somebody who's a wanderer will always be able to find home with that star. And Arya is nothing but a wanderer, right? These past books. She's not allowed to go home, and there is no home to go to, and she's kind of become a drifter and a wanderer from place to place. And it sucks, because this ship, this galley, the Titan's daughter, has kind of become home to her too in this past voyage.
Yeah, there's actually probably a pretty big time skip, like, if you think about it, because crossing a whole sea probably takes quite a bit of time.
Yeah. Danyo's father, the captain, shouts orders to the sailors on the Galeas Titan's daughter. Arya's at the prow, pretending for just a moment this was home. But none of her coins, even the iron one, could buy her the passage back to the north. Ugh. Heartbreak, right?
I know.
It kills me. I can't. George, you gotta stop that. You gotta cut this out. What you're doing
to
me. Yeah. Also, they probably don't think her coins buy her much. That iron coin's the most worthy coin she has. It's a bummer. I love the ship in general. There's so much description going on of the people and the different, like, personalities she's encountering and the different jobs and roles that they fulfill on the ship, and how she can't fulfill them because she's so fucking small, and how they, you know, woo her and want to be her friend. And even the description of the ship, and it's so colorful as you're coming into Braavos. You're just at the edge. You know, this is a journey through the center. All the purple sails on the ship and the color, and the figurehead on it is gilded, right? It's a golden maiden with a bowl of fruit. It's great because we're just coming off of Sansa with Littlefinger with that harvest and Persephone kind of imagery, right? On the ship where he tries to give her pomegranate and she's like, no, thank you. My stomach is, you know, upset and you're a creep motherfucking bitch. Please don't speak to me. I'm not my mother. weirdo, get a fucking job. But also, there's that myth of Idun's golden apples, that Nordic myth, Norse mythology, where basically there's a keeper of apples, Bragi's wife and the keeper of apples that give eternal youth. She's kidnapped by Loki and the giants at one point, and Loki trades her and the apples to these eagles that were holding him hostage, and they let him go, and the gods immediately like start to grow old because they don't have these eternal youth apples. And there's a lot going on of like her being taken far from home and people using like her gifts and using her and exploiting her, whether it's just her name or her gifts, basically, and her apples and being tricked and traded. And Arya's kind of, you know, she's out in Braavos making her own now. She has to find a job, find somewhere to live. She has no home. She has no mom or dad to go back to right now. Well, anyways, but...
big sad. But yeah, I like that. I don't know much about Norse mythology. Can you explain to me why did the eagles want the apples? What are the eagles going to do with the apples?
They're looked at as like, you know, they're like eternal life. They're like, they keep the gods young, they're magical, they're powerful. And she gets tricked into the forest because Loki is like, oh my god, I have apples just like those in the forest, but mine are even better. And she's like, what? And he's like, yeah, you should come see them. And she's like, I don't believe you. So she like comes to the forest with her apples, foolish move. And like with the trickster god, like, girl.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to apple shame. I'm sorry. That's not nice. But
I'm just trying to understand. So, yeah. Because I'm like, I assume that the eagles were already magical and maybe immortal. I'm like, what did they want with the apples? Like, are the eagles trying to like look cute and young all the time?
It's like he who controls the spice.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I get it now.
Because they steal them and the gods like died. Like the gods immediately are like, dude, I'm dying. Like I could die any day now because they took the apples from us. The apple chick's gone. Her apples are gone. And the eagles are like, ha ha ha, now we can be the gods.
Okay. Do they get
the
apples
like
back?
Everyone wants the spice, bro. Yeah. It's a whole thing. You got to check it out. There's some impros out of it. We'll talk about this later. But
it's a whole other story. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, literally a whole other book series probably or something like that. Whatever.
Yeah, a whole other poem, epic.
Yeah.
It's interesting though. Like there's a lot of mythology in the prow of this ship as it like comes in, and like I don't know, you can feel everything so ginormous in this chapter. Like I feel however tall Arya actually is, like 5 foot, 4'10", 4'8". I don't know what
she's
she is. 4'5". What
that,
are kids?
Right? I don't know.
What are kids like? I don't know. I was like 5'4" when I was 10.
Work, we
when
ask.
I was 10? I was tall as shit, dude. I don't have the same comparison. I was like 5'4", 5'5" when I was 10.
Yeah, I don't know that they're very... she's very tall, though. Like, I don't think that... they're a tall family. It just happened that Sophie Turner herself was tall.
Right. Like, Eddard's like a real, like, 6 foot, 5'10",
6'5", 11",
daddy. I don't know.
I think he's 5'10 or 11.
Yeah, not much taller, but I think the fur really, you know, adds to it. The fur really makes you look a little bigger.
Because aren't they, like, supposed to be stocky? And especially, like, what? Especially the Tully jeans are stockier, right? Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. Yeah, Arya thinks of the mentors that she's lost along the way, and she wonders if she'll see Jaqen in Braavos. I mean, honestly, we know that the answer is no, but she could have and just not known it. But we know where Jaqen is from the prologue. She decides she doesn't need her old friends here in Braavos so long as she has Needle. She's very lonely on the ship, though, and a lot of people shun or ignore her. But a couple of them give her gifts, like a silver fork or fingerless gloves for, you know, her cool, like, punk rock phase, and a floppy woolen hat patched with leather also works for that, too. She learns to tie sailor's knots and drinks fire wine every now and then, like little thimblefuls. And they name her Salty after the salt pans. They don't bother asking her real name, but they're always teaching her theirs.
It's kind of really sweet. She gets a new nickname, but it's kind of sweet in a way, and these people that maybe don't understand each other are all pushed together in this boat, right? And they learn a language between them. Like, this is literally a language learning skill. Before there were apps, college courses, high school courses, middle school, you know, like back like in the day, the long ago times, whenever they were, you couldn't just like open a book. You had to understand and actually use language learning skills like, okay, this is how I speak. It makes me think of like actual linguistic study for new languages or finding things. And like, I don't know, it's just like you have to find that common ground between you. And Arya shows that she's able to do that with people that she might not necessarily have a lot in common with to her everyday like thought, but she's able to find a common ground and learn their language and learn what they're saying and make out things over time.
Yeah, and she learns a lot more as time goes on, but I guess she also lucked out in that at least the sailors and traders can translate a little, right? They can be like, this word means this mm-hmm. thing, as opposed to
yeah.
they straight up don't because they have to for trade.
Yeah, I think there's something really interesting there. And even just like the whole bit with all the different people on the ship, she's learning how to do knots. She's learning life on a ship. There's a lot of emphasis being put on that in this chapter.
Oh, the knots seem interesting. I wonder if that'll come into play somewhere. Hmm.
They always feel interesting.
Yeah.
Like they're important.
Yeah, I don't think the Firewine will necessarily, other than for funsies.
Oh, it's a necessity on a ship, I'm sure.
Oh, man, sometimes I think about it, I'm like, obviously you had to sail the ship, but I'm like, oh my god, it must have been so boring. Anyways.
They're not for me.
Yeah. Two eyes stare back in the night at the ship. It's the eyes of the Titan of Braavos, who old Nan had told stories of back in Winterfell. And I really like how the language of the Titan's eyes echoes, of course, the language used to describe the other's eyes, like, you know, shining stars. Those are blue stars. These are just, I don't know, normal fucking stars because it's using fire. I mean, there are blue stars as well. Anyways, I'm doing a bad job of explaining things about today.
No, but that's a great point. The eyes really are glaring. Ha ha. But really, no, like they stand out. A lot about the Titan and a lot about the different statues as we go forward really stood out this reread to me. Just the little details about them and the materials that make them and the noises. And this is a really interesting passage. Like, I actually cut a little bit of this out just for time's sake because I could, and we're going to come back to Braavos, right, in our Patreon episode eventually. So please, please check out Patreon bonus episodes. It will be coming in the future, Braavos. But
we promise we've actually we'll continue the series.
No, I mean, we don't have a lot of the free cities left. It's this and Volantis, right?
Yeah, we just saved the two biggest, most important ones, the ones that we have the most information about.
Oh, I'm already like picturing the name Braavos. Take a bow.
Oh,
let her cook. No, I'm just kidding. But
I forgot people say that.
There's so much going on here of the arsenal, as we'll talk about, and the different, like, inside of the legs of the Titan of Braavos alone is, like, a whole mini city, right, unto itself. Yeah. Like, it has, like, its own economy and its own, like, guard and stuff, as we're gonna get through. So, here, he is tall as a mountain, and he, when Braavos stands in danger, he would wake with fire in his eyes, his rocky limbs grinding and groaning as he waded out into the sea to smash the enemies. But of course, that tale is only true in the arsenal, as we'll talk about. Nan also claimed that he ate little highborn girls. I wonder why she would tell Arya and Sansa this. But Luwin told them, no, he's just a statue. Those stories are only stories, sometimes. So interesting to your other point, like, sometimes they're only stories.
I think old Nan just has a lot of stories. Like, you guys think that I'm intrigued by cannibalism, but old Nan even more so. Like, think of how many stories she has that's like, yeah, the wildlings, and then they ate people. Oh, yeah, the Titan of Braavos eats people also. Oh, squishers or whatever, yeah, they eat people. Everyone fucking eats people.
Oh my god, rest in peace, old Nan. You would have loved the Criterion Channel.
We don't know that she's dead.
Yes, thankfully we've had many years to sit and think about it, Eliana. Yeah, I also love the way the Titan is described with, like, his own hair and shit, and, like, as you get closer, and I don't know, I also love the idea of sentinels waking and coming to life and doing battle. I don't know, necessarily that's a story we won't see, obviously. If George had time, he'd probably love to write that story. He probably has written that story. I don't want to talk about it, but I also love the little line from Nan, the highborn girl stuff is great because Littlefinger is literally the Titan of Braavos consuming Sansa right now.
Gross.
And I'm sorry, I know I didn't mean it that way, but I mean, like, metaphorically consumption going on there, like he's squeezing out the younger beautiful queen. Okay, listen, I'm just not going to speak anymore. He needs to get a job.
Well, I do think, yeah, that's really interesting. And also the idea even of, like, the speaking of mythology, right, the Titan consuming, I mean,
yeah,
yeah, Kronos is all like, I don't know, I'm gonna eat my kids.
That is exactly the angle I was coming to it from, not a gross ass little finger eating Sansa angle. And I'm sorry I've repeated it again.
I mean, like the Titan, it's pretty cool that you have to enter by going under it, and that there's all those little murder holes coming from it. It really does defend the city. Like, it comes to life. I kind of wonder if it, like, I don't think it actually walks. All right, first of all.
No, the people are its weaponry.
Yeah. Maybe it's a giant, like, mecha.
It makes me think a little bit of like Howland's Moving Castle and all, and some
Yeah.
of that kind of idea, and some of the guerrilla warfare there and in Dorne as well. And I think it's a really interesting way to defend the city and keep it without walls and keep it somewhat free, but we'll talk about that soon.
Though I do think that Howland's castle could actually be moving in the way that, you know, it's just drifting. I do think that one's possible.
Okay, Eliana, hater of all things magic and fun and whimsy.
I don't know. Like, is that not, I don't know. Science is also magic. Do you, it's like that place. Was it Gen 3? I want to say it was Gen 3 of Pokemon, where you, like, there were those islands that you would try to get to. Their location would always change.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. What are those
Yeah.
called? Shit.
I don't know, they were
Haven't
like,
played that gen in a while.
yeah, same. Even though they made a remake and I bought it, but I haven't played it.
Same.
I know some people love the Hoenn region, but anyway.
I loved Crystal the best, so I wish they would have remade Crystal. Like,
Yeah. You played Arceus, right? They're coming out apparently. I didn't
yeah.
realize that when they announced a new Legends game, it was the same vein as Arceus, but for Pokemon
Is that
X and
Horizons
Y.
or?
X and Y. No. It's like that was the open world one where you're like, oh my god, these Pokemon are about to like beat my ass.
No, I love Arceus, but I meant the new game.
No, it's the same location as X and Y, I think, but probably in the past. So
Well,
France.
sign me up. Sign me up. We have a passage from Arya here. Winterfell is burned and fallen, Arya reminded herself. Old Nan and Maester Luwyn were both dead, most like, and Sansa too. It did no good to think of them. All men must die. That was what the words meant. The words that Jaqen H'ghar had taught her when he gave her the worn iron coin. She had learned more Bravosi words since they left Salt Pans, the words for please and thank you and sea and star and firewine, but she came to them knowing that all men must die. Taught her so much. The crew spoke a good bit of the common tongue, but only the captain and his sons speak enough of it to talk to Arya.
Yeah, there's a line here where she's like, and I'm almost 11, and just every single time we've called it out in multiple chapters, but it makes me think of Chloe's favorite Vine video. It's not really your favorite, but one of them, probably.
It's up there.
Yeah, Denyo, the captain's son, loves to talk about Braavos, though, and is like, listen about my home, it fucking rocks. Especially when Arya asks him about religions, and he tells her about the Sept Beyond the Sea, which is for worshippers of the Seven. She goes, they're not my Seven. They were my mother's gods, and they let the Freys murder her, the twins. She wondered whether she would find a godswood in Braavos, with a weirwood at its heart. And Arya thinks about, like, I don't know, the old gods are all dead too, because, like, you know, she's going through trauma and this all men must die part because everyone that she, like, cares about keeps dying. And so she's like, yeah, the old gods are dead, just like my family. And it's interesting that this is the companion book, right, to Adelwydda, where we really get to learn more about how the old gods definitely are not dead. In fact, like, that's one of their defining features, how they keep not being dead. And Arya's like, well, my dad thought that the lone wolf doesn't survive. You need the pack. But I don't know, I think deep down in her heart she knows that's not true, because Nymeria is like, all right, I'm alone in the woods. Time to go get a pack. I'm gonna go, you know, bully all these other smaller wolves. They're my new pack now.
I love this mirror with Nymeria that you've held up. That's what Arya really craves, right? Her own pack to brat pack around with. And
Aww.
I love what you've called out here that, yes, if you read the books in the order that they've been published, like A to Z, A Dance with Dragons really does emphasize that Arya is like the pre-plot to that, right? Of showing you that bit of magic before Bran gets full on caved, before he's in
Yeah.
that cave, motherfucker. He's like Play-Doh-ing it up. I don't know. There's something interesting there, like about what you've called out about the way George has actually written these in a row that personally strikes me, but then I'm like, maybe he meant it because, you know, he did write the books in a row. Ish.
They probably were going to be in the same book before he was like, I'm gonna split it up by geography now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It complements each, they complement each other really well. And I think that's something that when you're reading Arya chapters, you don't always think about. They seem more like, rah, rah, I'm out there poking people with swords and on the road running from danger. But then when you actually get into them, there's a lot of magic going on.
Yeah, and that's why you should all keep on a lookout for when we remix Affek, Sam 1, and Adota, John 2, into one
Okay.
mashup episode. Girl talk.
Girl talk.
Girl talk, Sal. We're the girls.
Oh my God. Wow. We're just girls gone canon. Oh. Anyways, the Moonsingers were refuted as having the greatest temple, having led the Bravosi to the land here beyond the Dragon Lords. And we start going across some of these temples, like the Father of Waters, who is esteemed, but his house is built anew whenever he takes his bride, which just need to comment that I know he fucks good. That's what that means. The Father of Waters, when he takes his bride, oh girl, he rips that house
Oh my
apart.
God.
That's what this means. That's what George is telling us about the Father of Water. More like the Daddy of Waters, if you know what I mean.
He's called the Father of Waters because of, you know, how wet everyone is.
Yeah, the waters are this pussy.
Oh my God. Chloe's insistent.
The rest of the gods are on the aisles throughout the center of the city, like the many-faced god. I actually really love that this is an island city, you know, like Venice or Lindau, Bavarian Germany, which is kind of like it's like out like it's in the Swiss area, the Bavarian. It's all over. It's in this little like area of all three. It's interesting, but it has like all these buildings there too in Lindau. There's a huge lion statue. There's a lighthouse. There's a handful of other buildings that are kind of giving bravos. So it's kind of cool to look at and to see the infrastructure. I mean, Manhattan is an island city, technically, when you
Oh,
think
yeah.
about it. So.
That's actually true. Yeah. Because I was also thinking that the way that Braavos is portrayed, like, obviously, you know, we do think about Venice, but when Arya's here, she's like, oh, I've been to a city, but like, yo, this is a city. You know?
Yeah,
And New
it's
York is what
actually
I
like
think
one of
about,
my
like, a
favorite parts of the
city.
chapter.
Yeah. As opposed to, I don't know, coming from Columbus. I just picked a random city.
She's farther north than that. How dare you?
Well, you know what I
Just a
mean? Like
little,
a
but
smaller city
yeah.
versus New York.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have a line of Arya did not know any many-faced god, but if he answered prayers, he might be the god she sought. Sir Gregor, Dunsan, Raff the Sweetling, Sir Ilyn, Sir Meryn, Queen Cersei. Only six now. Joffrey was dead. The Hound had slain Polliver, and she'd stabbed the Tickler herself. And that stupid squire with his pimple. And she thinks about it, she's like, I don't know, I probably should have given Sandor the gift of mercy and then stabbed him as part of that. And yeah, I mean, again, we talked about this a little last episode, but yep, the mercy from both sisters.
Huh, I know someone who wrote an essay on that once.
Yeah, I don't know, we probably have quoted it on this podcast, maybe, or maybe some of our
My
guests have too.
God. Yeah, no, though that is it's interesting that I love like the censorship here, right, of her prayer and how she like adds asterisks to Sandor, like, well, I left him to die, so you know,
Yeah, she's
that's
like,
that. I did it. I killed him. I knocked one off my list.
I should have done it. Kind of makes me think of like how we've been talking about in the past few episodes, Sandra being like, damn it, I should have brought that other little girl with me, huh? So,
Yeah.
except hers is like, I should have killed that man, but whatever.
Miss that guy. Don't, I'm grieving. Don't bring him into this,
That's
please.
right, we don't have any more Sandra chapters, really. I mean, maybe. Oh, just a
It's
little.
really hurting me, you
Small
know,
cameos.
so please respect me and my time of
Okay.
grief. So Denyo grabs Arya and points her toward ragged gray curtains of mist. Seagulls are overhead, and then trees, and then sea, and open water, and then the Titan of Braavos towering above them all. Green-haired, bronze-plated, his hair's made of hemp ropes that are dyed green, and fires burn in the caves of his eyes, carrying a broken sword.
The seagulls really make it. The seagulls really make the world building. I don't know why, they just do. And something about the Titan of Braavos we've been talking about his appearance kind of sounds like the damp hair to me. Like, his fashion and his hair just sounds like the damp hair. And I like that he's clutching in his hand a broken sword. It makes me think of ice. Ice is a sword that has been broken. Actually, also makes me think now of the... What is this bug? Please tell me you're not a mosquito. It makes me even think of the beginning of this whole series, right? Waymar's sword shattering. But it's just, it's another, like, symbol of brokenness in this story that's held up.
Yeah, I didn't even think about ice, but I know that Arya probably would have felt very much about it by thinking about a broken sword. Or I guess she doesn't know.
Yeah, it's not, I guess you're right. It's not like a big secret. It's not, sorry, it's not a big publicized thing. Sansa only realizes it because she's like, wait, where'd they get a new Valyrian sword from? What the fuck?
That's fucking depressing. Thanks, Eliana. Thanks, I hate it. Take it back. Arya notes that the statue's only a little bigger than Baelor's statue in King's Landing. Until they get closer, and it starts to grow larger. They row through the Titan's legs, and Arya realizes the Titan could step over the walls of Winterfell. What? The Titan gives a mighty roar, and Arya flinches. Denyo laughs, telling her, it's a warning call to the arsenal that we're coming. Don't be afraid. Arya shouts, it was just too loud, is all. Back. Sure.
Cute.
It is cute. He tells her the arsenal can build a war galley in a day, pointing out all of the ships and weaponry.
Yeah, good call out on the stepping over the walls of Winterfell. And yeah, I don't know, this thing, there's a million different ways that I guess it could play out and be important, but the whole build a war galley in a day, I'm just like, it feels important.
Yeah, Braavos is definitely going to support someone, right? Don't know who yet, but someone's going to get supported by them and their ships.
Yeah, I can tell you who won't be. Cersei. We've ruled out one. Now to narrow it down for everyone else.
Stannis, he's broke, so...
Yeah, but they're still trying to hit him up. They're like, Stannis, do you want to take out a student loan?
Because Jon Snow was the student that became the master.
And we're going to enroll Stannis you at the School of Hard Knocks.
Getting schooled. Oh my god. There's something in here that I love that, like, first off, as a comparison, when you're a kid, and like you were saying, like, when you step off the plane at LAX with your dreams in a cardigan, right?
And you're like, what is this hellhole?
In a place that's bigger.
Yeah. Why is the traffic like this?
Yeah, those are common thoughts, actually. No, but when you step into a big city for the first time and you're like, holy shit, I've been in cities, but this is a crazy big city. I live in a big city in one of the top populated cities, you know. I'm in one of those, and it's crazy sometimes. Like, just the sheer amount of people and places can be overwhelming. And I grew up in a city of, like, 100,000 people. So to go to, like, an almost 2 million pop is nuts. Yeah, but for Arya, you know, she grew up in Winterfell, and she went to King's Landing, and she was like, bro, this place is huge. And now she's here in Braavos, and she's like, whoa, this is a real city. Especially, like, with all of the stacking on top of, and it's on an island. And there's also something interesting about, like, she starts to think about how, well, there's no walls, she says, as we'll talk about in a minute. And King's Landing has walls around it to keep out enemies, right? But also kind of to jail their people. Like, King's Landing kind of boasts being this grand, greatest capital. But even Old Town, in the same exact nation, if you went down there, like, sometimes Old Town could be kind of a brighter, shining, sparkling place of culture and epicenter of people more than King's Landing.
Oh, for sure.
And then you look at, you know, like, I mean, even that's kind of, everyone's like, oh, Old Town's kind of nice, man. Old Town's kind of nice. And then you go to Braavos and it's even grander. It's this giant city in the sea with all these statues and ornament and all these religions and places to worship. And it It's just so different and so enriching, and it starts to make King's Landing kind of look like a lie, right?
Yeah, I think something that isn't like stressed enough. I don't know how well like the books really convey it, or even like the show conveyed it, but like the free cities are next level cities, which is how it was, right, during the Renaissance and stuff, and even during the Middle Ages, right? Yeah, you had some of these like cities and stuff on England, Britain, or whatever it was called, but then like you go to the mainland, you go to like yeah, these Italian cities, they were very developed comparably. They were the height of culture at that time, and not height of cu they were the center of culture for them at that time. And yeah, she's like, I don't know, the Titan of Braavos is not that impressive. And then they get closer and she's like, okay. All right. And I think it's interesting that you called out the walls of King's Landing and it trapping its citizens. And also all Old Town, because they did that in Old Town, right? He was like, we've got a grayscale problem. Let's just trap everyone in here so we don't spread it to everyone else.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because there's grayscale in the future, probably in Westeros, but also because CK3 just put out, Crusader Kings
Oh.
3 just put out an update that introduces plagues back in and disease and
Plagues
illness.
back in.
And well, in CK2 they had it and it was pretty well perfected, but CK3 they finally have released it with some other stuff that's coming out. And it is in AGOT mod so far. It is in the Game of Thrones mod, but I was playing it on base game because I don't want to update all my mods yet and figure that out and change shit. I'm like, not yet. I'm just gonna play base game and see what it's like. And it's wild. They do it historically, where you could change the rules and, have it not happen historically. But if you don't wall your shit up, it's over, decimated.
Yeah, maybe even literally while you're shit up, if you're thinking like dysentery.
Literally.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll learn about that too for water sources, right? As they enter part of the water, and Arya tries to recall what Luwin had taught her about Braavos, and she doesn't really remember much. She just sees it, and it's a flat city with only hills of bronze, marble, brick, and granite, and it has no walls. Denyo tells her that the galleys are their walls. They don't need walls because they have their ships to act as walls and the arsenal. This is where the Titan's daughter parts from Arya, though, and they prepare to lower her in a boat to avoid customs inspecting their ship with her on it. Yorko takes her ashore.
Yeah, she wanted to stay aboard the Titan's daughter secretly, but they didn't really need a second boy. She can only really do so many jobs at her age, and they're just like, we don't need more child labor. So he says, Valar Dohaeris. He touched two fingers to his brow. I beg you remember Tarnisio Terris and the service he has done you.
I will, Arya said in a small voice.
Aw. So we know from inferring it, as we read the rest of Arya's chapters, that the Faceless Men have a rule that you cannot take a job where the hit is someone that you know, which is why everyone is actually pretty eager to give Arya their name. They're like, this is my name is this. Remember that. Remember that. If you ever hear someone mention it in a hit, you can't take it. And a running theme throughout the story, but especially in Arya's, is that proximity. When it comes to death, right? Like the death of a boy like Micah, who is inconsequential to a lot of the other highborn people, that was a big tragedy for her, right? This was a boy that she knew and she played with, even though she was like, why did I even care so much about it? Because you knew him. You knew him. He had a name. You spent time together. But then you have those nameless boys who stopped her in the stables at King's Landing, and then this pimply one. She's not worried about them dying. Not really. Like, she was a little shaken about the first one, but she's not worried about this pimply boy. She's like, he shouldn't have gotten in my way. Chloe's like, yeah, on her face.
Well,
Oh,
Dunbar's number, man. We've talked about it before, but it's Dunbar's
yeah, it
number.
is that.
You
Yeah.
can only care about so many people that are in proximity to you, and then after that, like, the names fade away, the people fade away, and it's what she said to Sandor, or about Sandor, what she thought about Sandor, right? When she was like, well, maybe, I mean, she hadn't really even known Micah, she thinks, and I'm like, oh no, Arya, honey, sweetie. Memories fade, people fade. It's like what Beric says, right? Are you my mother, Thoros? I don't
Yeah.
remember.
Yeah, just like Dany and the characters in her story as well. And like, I mean, for her, the Hound was someone whose death was worth praying for, but like Sandor, That's a guy. That's his name, his real name, you know. That isn't someone anymore that she can look in the eyes and be like, yeah, I'm gonna kill him. And I think that's the reason why the faceless men have that rule, right? Because they're like, if you know someone, it's gonna be much harder to carry out the job. And that's the case with the Night's Watch and
Yeah.
the King's Guard as well. That's why they have that rule. So it's really about proximity, creating
And
tragedy.
that's why it all leads to broken men. Aw.
Yeah, because the broken men, like, they are broken off from society. That's
Yeah,
part of it
they're
too.
isolated, man.
Yeah, except for when they form, I don't know, groups with each other, but their groups are built on, what if we went and fucked shit up more? What? It is. It's big
Is.
sad,
No, it is.
but
It's
also for
chaos, yeah.
everyone, for them, but also all the people that they make lives terrible for. Anyway, all Arya has to bring off the ship are the clothes that she wears. She's got a pouch of coins, gifts from the crew, a dagger on one hip, and needle on her right. We have this line that I kind of like of the wind tugged at her cloak, insistent as a ghost. I just like it because of all the ghosts floating around Arya's story. We also have
It reminds
Yorpa.
me of the Veil, also. It reminds me a
Oh,
little bit of the Veil
yeah.
with Sansa going down the mountain and the wind howling like a wolf.
Yeah, there's a part of me that also feels like, is this a thing that would be way more poignant to me with the Winds of Winter? But I don't know. I just don't know.
That's the whole podcast,
Would this mean more to me with the Winds of Winter? Yes, every single time. Yorko is the captain's older, less friendly son, and she thinks that, oh shit, I should have said goodbye to Denyo before I left, my bad. And she wonders if she'll see Denyo again, and I kind of wonder if maybe she will. Maybe he'll show up in the story again, and hopefully not as a hit. Like, who wants to kill Denyo? He's 12, right? But I don't know. But maybe he's someone that she could encounter while disguised as someone else, which is not really something we've seen Arya have to do much yet, right? Mostly because, like, you know, for the most part, when you meet people, like, they recognize you. That's how the world usually works, because we just keep our own faces in real life. And so it'll be interesting to see that play out in Arya's storyline, where she has to pretend to be someone else around him, if that were the case. And also, in this one, Arya is the one leaving and not saying goodbye to Denyo. Very rude, especially, but it's also an interesting inversion of her feeling left behind by her other friends.
Oh my God, she's in her like Tina Belcher love 'em and leave 'em era. Good for her, you know?
Oh my God.
No, I really think she's gonna see Denyo again. I love that you pointed out that great device of fi when we find out that, you know, the faceless men, if you know their name, you can't kill them. I don't even remember the first time I realized that, but whenever I put it all together for the first time on a read, I remember being like mind blown, like, oh my God, George, you genius, you animal. I remember feeling that way a lot, to be fair, but.
I'm not convinced I put it together or just like quickly read it and then like saw it later on Reddit. Get it?
What, chicken or egg? You know, chicken or egg.
Yeah. It's been a long time. I don't know anymore.
I don't either. It's been too
It's
long.
been
Oh
10
God,
years
it's
at
been like
least.
10 years. Ask me again in another 10 years.
Ugh.
Again, my favorite quote. Also, and like I said earlier, I'm really noting how much she wants to stay on that ship and how much she would have loved to stay on the ship and travel around
We
and
should have stayed on that ship, Jon Snow.
live in the sea. I mean, I'm like, okay, maybe we're onto something
Oh, yeah, true.
for a career choice, you know? Maybe she could be a master of ships
She
or
could.
go adventure.
Yeah. Hopefully. Maybe she's better at navigating by the stars when she learns that. Actually, honestly, if she had learned that from the beginning, that would have been way better than relying on the fucking moss.
I mean, the good news is at least on land she has Nymeria, you know?
Yeah, but like on land, I mean, they don't have as much light pollution as we do, so I assume she would be fine using the stars to navigate.
Probably. To Arya's right is a harbor of piers, quays, and ebony whalers, swan ships from the Summer Isles, and tons of galleys. To her left, another harbor beyond sinking land where half-drowned buildings are thrusting themselves out of the water. Temples, towers, palaces, all are as large, if not bigger, than the ones in King's Landing, and she worries that she will become a mouse all over again.
I'm just like, don't worry, Arya, you're not gonna be a mouse. You're gonna be a cat. We're getting bigger. And also, I don't know, don't undersell mice. Hashtag Dune. And
Hashtag Madib.
yeah, right? So obviously, Braavos is very well suited, well situated for trade geographically, but also when Arya notices that they don't really have any trees, but are still a very incredible, lucrative city, it kind of makes me think, like, wow, the Ironborn were just making fucking excuses to raid. Like, that could have been them if they had tried harder, maybe. Throwing it
But they
out
just
there.
really liked the stuff.
They
They were
just
like, man,
really,
I really
yeah.
like your stuff. Yeah. They're just thieves. You
I'm
know,
just
that's
throwing
the
it
only
out there.
lifestyle they have.
Yeah. That's all.
Back in the glory day, we used to steal with some bigger excuses to steal.
Yeah, what if they had stolen? They could have stole better if they had made banks. Duh, Ironborn.
It's like build back better, but steal back better. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, if they had made
it's
an
giving a
iron
very
bank.
corrupt OPA. You know what I mean?
No, because I only watch the show.
Read the books, you nerd. They head down the Great Canal of the city. This must be so beautiful. I would have loved to get this in an adaptation. Oh,
Fuck.
oh, well.
Oh,
They head down the Great
well.
Canal of the city into the many islands that connect Braavos, passing a great stone bridge decorated with sea creatures, another that's carved with lacy vines and foliage, and then a third bridge with 1,000 painted eyes. Ooh, and one? Yorko tells her about the Sweetwater River that brings water from the mainland in for the fountains. So we learn about the second source of water. And then they approach a row of mighty statues of sea lords of Braavos. The next isle we come upon is the Isle of Gods, with great statues and the Temple of the Moonsingers, which I have to say is gorgeous. Like, it sounds so beautiful. Like, I look at it in my brain and I'm like, oh, I want to go there. It's a huge silver dome, milk glass windows with phases of the moons on them, it's snow white walls, and then it's guarded by a pair of big marble maidens. I just think that's so. Ooh.
I just think of the
Ooh.
Silver Millennium. I'm like, that's what it looks
Yeah.
like. Silver
It's
Millennium
beautiful.
from Sailor
It's
Moon.
beautiful. Oh.
I like that, like, the founding story of Braavos and some of the religion is around those Moonsingers and the Moon Maidens, right? Because, and how it ties into Arya's story, right? She's a girl who's been likened to the moon by her father, and this idea that they are in the darkness with an ever-changing face all ties in with the whole, like, many face thing. And also somewhere else, her sister was under the banner of protection of a crescent moon and a bird, but whatever. Let's just focus on the moon part, not the bird part.
No, I love that though. There's a lot of connection between the Vale and Braavos in these chapters and the freedoms that both girls are kind of feeling, but also not, right? Like some of those freedoms are restrictive and they're learning to navigate things. And then there's a lot of parallels in, you know, the finery and the looks of the kingdoms and that palace of the moon, you know, is not dissimilar in some ways as well in the way that coming down the mountain is described in the chill of winter. Kind of is described similar to this
Oh,
Moonsinger temple.
true. Yeah, they're both in places with very interesting geography right now.
And a lot of like actual architecture and design stuff going on that's similar as far as like statues, right? You have the statues in the Vale and you have different like pillars and yeah.
Yeah. Well, beyond is R'hllor's temple, which makes Arya think of Thoros and Beric in turn. They also see the Holy Refuge, which is called the Warren. And I'm like, Warren should have
Missed
picked
opportunity.
this. I know!
Missed
Warren, you
opportunity.
should have picked this episode.
Not the Warren.
The Warren. He's canon. He's canon in this story.
Wow.
Wow. In Arya's story specifically.
Wow.
Next thing we
That
know,
is a.
this.
This is getting out of hand. And this is where they honor the small gods forgotten by the world. So I'm like, Warren, are you the small gods forgotten by the world?
Oh, we remember
Wow.
Warren. So after a tunnel, they come to another bridge. It's a rocky knoll with a windowless temple of dark gray stone, and Yoriko tarries, leaves her here, and bids her fellow Doharis.
Everyone's in on this very sick joke that Arya's going to the assassin school except for Arya. Arya is the only person that doesn't know, so all of them are like speaking to her in these subdued tones, very seriously. And like here, he's like, you can go do this thing now. And she's like, yeah, I will. And then in her head, she's like, what am I going to do? I don't know. Like, what am I doing? They keep telling me I'm doing something. What is this thing?
My favorite is that I think they all think she knows, right?
Yeah, like, they think she knows.
That's why they're all like, she knows that like when I tell her my name, she's got to fucking remember it. I ain't just being nice, you know?
Dude, you know, for weeks they're going to talk and be like, that Westerosi girl is the scariest kid I've ever met. Like, scariest little girl I know.
Right. That's why they didn't even bother asking her name. They were like, I don't know, we're just going to call her Salty, because they were like, whatever name she gives us isn't going to be real anyway. I don't have time for fake names. Let's just give her one. And they think she knows.
Her with the coin, like, they probably think she's already like a fully grown human with this little girl's face on. Like, they're probably like, oh shit.
Oh my god, you're right. They think she's like fucking 50 years old.
Yeah. They think she's like, you know, just fucking there as an old person, gonna ruin their day here to kill someone. They're like, straighten up, fly right. Oh shit.
Yeah. They're probably like, I can't believe she's bothering to pretend she can't speak Valyrian. Like, shut the fuck up, little girl. Whatever.
She's like out here plucky as hell on this boat. Like, gee, mister, can I help you with whatever you're doing? And they're like, okay, scary MRFer.
That's the real reason why they're like, no, you can't stay and have a job on this ship. You have a job. You have a job. Hell. It's killing people.
And she's portraying herself as a boy, which is interesting because when we see Gilly and Sam on the trip, right, some of the people are like, oh, a woman is bad luck on the ship. She's bad luck. And so Arya's still passing herself off as a boy here because it's easier for travel.
That's true. But also, like, are you going to be the person willing to tell the faceless person, no, you're bad luck to have on the ship? No, they're just gonna steal your face or someone else's face on the ship and just go on the ship. You can't, you just gotta say yes and be like, yeah, you can come on the ship.
Damn.
It's true, though. That's what they would do. They'd be like,
she hasn't even been hired yet.
That's what they would think.
Yeah. Well, as she climbs up the dock, she can hear her heart beating and she is thinking about Sirio. Right, about Braavos and Sirio. Aww. And what he has told her.
She can hear her heart beating, and she goes, suddenly, she was somewhere else, back in Harrenhal with Gendry, maybe, or with the Hound in the woods along the Trident. Salty is a stupid child, she told herself. I am a wolf, and will not be afraid. She patted Needle's hilt for luck, and plunged into the shadows, taking the steps two at a time, so no one could ever say she'd been afraid. At the top, she found a set of carved wooden doors 12 feet high. The left-hand door was made of weirwood pale as bone, the right of gleaming ebony. In their center was a carved moon face, ebony on the weirwood side, weirwood on the ebony. The look of it reminded her somehow of the heart tree in the godswood at Winterfell. The doors are watching me, she thought.
So, we have talked about this very interesting door before. I feel like maybe it was in Bran. I know we've talked about it. We've been doing this for several years, many years. So I'm like, it has to have happened.
We're 50-year-old women.
Dude, wait. We've been doing this for like 6 years. My God. So we've definitely talked about this door, but I want to come at it at a new angle. And something I've been thinking about is, especially like when we think about the Bran and Jaime chapters where we talked about weirwood stumps and weirwood paste, these concepts have kind of come up before. So I'm sure this is some land we've plowed together, but we're replowing some aspects and, you know, shaping some crops in a different direction here. Stick with me for it. Something's going on with this door that I find fascinating, and something's going on with ebony doors in A Song of Ice and Fire and weirwood doors in total. Like, Tobo Mott, who is Kohoric, but he had a door just like this. Double doors showing a hunting scene carved in ebony and weirwood. So we had both ebony and weirwood.
Interesting.
And we also hear about this kind of door in Dany 4 in the House of the Undying, the door to the House of the Undying. Finally, the stair opened. To her right, a set of wide wooden doors had been thrown open. They were fashioned of ebony and weirwood, the black and white grains swirling and twisting in strange interwoven patterns. There's also an ebony bench in both Karth and Marine that Dany sits on. Doran's wheelchair, actually, in Captain of the Guards, is partially made of ebony. The box that Cersei sends Gregor's head in Cersei 4, is ebony. And then in Ugly Little Girl, the chairs are carved of weirwood and ebony. So, really interesting. Otherwise, it's literally used to describe a skin color by George. Those are the only mentions, which kind of stands out to me. I'm like, there are 21 total mentions, I think, in the books, with two things in The World of Ice and Fire we'll come to in a second that are kind of similar to using ebony at all. I don't know, that kind of stood out to me when I was looking around at it, especially because we're always focused on the weirwood side of the thing, and I don't think we really talk about the ebony. And so in The World of Ice and Fire, we learn that the Summer Isles actually have bloodwood, ebony, mahogany, purple heart, blue maho, burl, tigerwood, golden heart, and pink ivory and other precious woods in the Summer Isles, as well as some other commodities that are looked at as luxuries. And the Valyrians kind of had a taste for it, so they would love to come to the Summer Isles and take those things. So interesting, because we don't know about where the ebony tree comes from. Otherwise, this implies to me like they're not natural to Westeros or the Free Cities necessarily, and they might possibly just be on the Summer Isles. But it brings me back to a tree that we've talked about before from Dany 4 at the House of the Undying outside. Long and low, without towers or windows, it coiled like a stone serpent through a grove of black-barked trees whose inky blue leaves made the stuff of the sorceress drink the Karthing call shade of the evening. Huh. So when Arya gets to the door, she talks about how the door is gleaming ebony. In our real world, these trees are pretty rare, usually, and if they have fruit, believe it or not, it's persimmon that they have. But they are pretty rare in our world. They're softly textured and they're super shiny with a mirror-like polish when they're polished up, which makes them really great for ornamental things. And in Westeros, they tend to be used for ornamental things too when they're not being used for freaky fucking magic doors, right? Mm-hmm. We see them as like a bench or as the wheelchair. So interesting that it's being used alongside weirwood, and it makes me think of two possible questions slash thoughts of, is ebony the shade of the evening tree wood?
I think it is, right? It's described as a black barked tree. Found near the House of the Undying with blue leaves. I think I always thought it might have been that.
Right, because it seems it, and it's also the way it's described reminds me a lot of the way obsidian is described, and I'm not saying that they're the same, but it makes me wonder about the magical properties, and if used next to the weirwood, does it induce magical properties together? And why I think that too comes with, you know, it seems like there was some sort of prescience going on, some sort of like the kindly man knew Arya was coming. How?
Oh, yeah.
Right. How does he know that she's coming? Obviously, there's intelligence we have still not learned or been revealed from the Faceless Men. We're just getting into it now. We know they have some sort of technique that may or may not be related to magic or something, or science, as Eliana so called it earlier. Magic hater. Suddenly she loves magic. I don't know. Interesting. But I'm just kidding. But I'm curious. Like, I feel like we'll probably get further reveal about this, but it makes me think that the door and the fact that many things built here in this temple are made out of the ebony and, of course, ivory, the weirwood. Ebony and ivory. We got it. Dual. Look at that. But it's made out of the weirwood and the possible tree bark, etc. And if the leaves have magic properties, who's to say that the tree bark does not have magic qualities as well? As we know, weirwoods have magical qualities.
Yeah, I feel like it's always been implied that weirwoods might, even like the wood part does, because of, I don't know, people being really intrigued by weirwood bows. It's possible like that the, even if this isn't a shade of the evening tree, which I think it is, if it is an ebony tree, it could have magical properties, because like we have obsidian in our real world and it's not magic, but it clearly is in this one.
Yeah.
So it could be. They were also, I was looking it up more, like they're saying that the black bark trees of the shade of the evening shit, It's unknown if it has a connection with the ebony of the Somewhere Isles and also the ironwoods of Westeros and the nightwoods of Essos that I don't fucking know anything about. I don't know anything about that last one. But I don't know. I feel like, so I don't think this is true. I was just like thinking random shit. I was like, what if like all of these doors, like are connected and you can just like
What
open the
if they
door
lead
and
to each other?
yeah, like you could, if you open that front door, you can exit out of, I don't
Yeah.
know, yeah, the
It's like the
House of the
SpongeBob Dream
Undying.
episode.
Yeah.
Which is
Yes.
also like my dreams lately that I've mentioned, that I've had crazy dreams to you lately offline. I've
Yeah.
told you about them. I'm not telling you motherfuckers about them, but the most recent one did involve some bears, some baby bears, but we're not going to go into it. And like there was a belt buckle with like a love note written on it. I don't know. It's real crazy, but I think like it's like some sort of magical consciousness for
Yeah.
sure. And I definitely think the House of the Undying Door and this door have to be have some sort of connection.
I don't think, like, yeah, I don't think maybe it's what I said. That was just a random idea
No.
I was like thinking about, but it could even be like an indication of we believe, I don't know, whatever in this thing, or we're channeling. I don't know, like, 'cause it's so interesting that Tobo Mott of House Applesauce has it. And
Stop. Oh my God. No, but also because he was known to possibly have known how to make the Valyrian steel.
exactly, he knows like a non-zero amount of magic.
So that to me says there's a connection, and I just had to call it out because I'm like, something is up with those doors being
Yeah.
connected and their
Okay.
magical properties.
Random thought. First, there's a lot of things that would have to get us to this point, but there are weirwood bows. What if Arya
Yeah.
ever fucking learned to shoot a bow and arrow like she's been dreaming of this whole time? She had a bow that was made of the two woods together.
Interesting, interesting. Or weirwood bow and ebony arrows.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, step one, learn to shoot a bow, but it's a
We
pretty
have
big
tons
one.
of time before that happens, so don't worry.
It's a pretty big hurdle she's gonna get over to that point. I'm sure George thought he could do it in a 5-year gap, but I don't know what's gonna happen now. Anyway.
Well, it's been more than that, so.
So she pushes on the door. We're gonna enter the doors now, all right? Maybe it's also protective, I don't know, but it won't open. So she holds her coin up and says, "Valar Morghulis," and the doors open inward in silence, no human hand behind them, and Arya enters.
Can't get over how this is like a club for people who say they want to die. I just want to
Actually,
go
that's so
there.
sad.
Oh my God. That's where I'm going. House of Black and White.
And then
I
I
love
go
that
there from the other
line.
temple and just bring her back to life.
No, you can go there from like the House of the Undying and phase through the door and just show up. Remember? That's how it works, right?
Yeah, and then well, I'll use a different magic to bring you back to life then, I guess.
What we're talking about is teleporting, teleporting across the planetos.
Yeah, that was what we were saying about the doors earlier. Sorry everyone if that
It's a
wasn't
callback.
clear.
There's that line, the doors closed behind her, and for a moment she was blind. Needle was in her hand, though she did not remember drawing it. Long night vibes. I'm like, that could be probably written in The Winds of Winter or Dream of Spring, so.
Yes. Yeah, I do think that that's going to come into play for sure. And this was a random thought. What if Arya starts wearing an eye patch? Apparently the reason why like people wear eye patches, sailors and stuff, is because it makes it easier to adjust to like under the deck, the lighting there, different lighting conditions. Anyway, so I was like, what if Arya starts wearing an eye patch? But also, I love how Valar Morghulis is what opens the doors, right? I think there's a lot about Arya's story that can tie into this idea of like magic words, right? Like the idea of open sesame, and that's how Valar Morghulis operates for her in this. And I think there are a couple of other ones as well with the constant repetition of these mantras.
There's been a lot of like with the North Star and with the Open Sesame, all these like kind of fairy tale
Yeah.
and folklore little bits in her story this chapter.
Yeah, and I do think, like, we're gonna see other ones like sticking with the pointy end. I think those are gonna act like magic words for her story as well, as she,
Oh.
well, more of a like, it's me, John, don't you remember? Who's this random ass girl? Oh
Right.
God,
You have
I
to know
mean,
your
it's
name. You have
Jane.
to know your name. I get it.
Yeah, so.
So it's very dark inside. There are a few candles burning in the walls, and Arya can only make out a few people. Someone's weeping, someone's whispering. Water is running too. Her eyes adjust eventually and she sees statues, massive, threatening ones with red candles around their feet. A marble woman who's 12 feet tall, tears from her eyes, filling a bowl that she cradled. A man with the lion's head on an ebony throne. A bronze and iron horse. A great stone face. A pale infant with a sword. A shaggy black goat. A hooded man on a staff. The rest are just looming shapes. And between the gods are alcoves.
Yeah, so she can hear water here, right? And that's because there's a shit ton of fountains. It's probably that poison draft that they give everyone. And also we've talked about how water operates in Arya's story already with the water dancing and also with gender fluidity. So cool that it's here in the House of Black and White, which is very much about changeability. And also a couple of the gods that we're seeing here, right? Some of these are references to George's other works.
Yeah, we're definitely going to come back to these in our Braavos episode for patrons. But to break a few of them down, we have the Weeping Lady of Lys, Lion of Night, the Great Shepherd, I believe, is the hooded man on a staff. Bacchylon is the baby with the sword. The Black Goat, you know, Philip. And the bronze iron horse, which I think is probably a Dothraki god, possibly, but I don't think it's named, so.
I mean, what do you gotta say? It's the horse, you know? He doesn't need a name.
The horse, of course.
A horse, of course. Wow, what if that is his name? Anyway.
I hope so.
Me too. We should, the next time I'm at a, I should add that to
put
my
it
list
on your
of
list.
Things to ask
put it
George.
On your list.
Yeah, yeah. She moves silently through the rows, passing women, whispering together, smelling candles. Something smells like some queer incense to her until she gets deeper into the temple where she smells snow, pine needles, and hot stew. Good smells.
I thought the smelling snow and pine needles and hot stew is very interesting and speaks kind of almost to like her life at Winterfell, a memory of Winterfell. And it reminds me of Bran with the smells he smells from the weirwood paste. And Dany, right, with the flavor of the House of the Undying, or I guess the flavor for Bran as well. The flavors from the Weirwood Paste and the Shade of the Evening, right, brought that to memory, thinking about the door and the ebony trees. It also reminds me of another character who takes Shade of the Evening, not in the published five books. So Bran and Dany eating the Weirwood Paste and the Shade of the Evening, and bleep! A character who eats Shade of the Evening.
Yeah. They're cooking drugs, basically, back there. No, I do think it. I think it's those. What if? Okay.
Yeah.
If the two doors, what if they're mixing the Weirwood Paste and the Shade of the Evening together?
Holy shit.
No, I'm being serious. I'm being serious. What if
no,
they're
I'm,
mixing
I'm
them together?
No, I'm serious, too. That would be insane. That would be insane. It's like an upper and a downer, but no, they're actually both just hallucinogenics. But, bro.
What
they're selling
do?
God.
Yeah, I mean, it could be part of their rituals for sure, you know? Like, that really could be what they're doing.
Yeah, dude.
Interesting. Anyway, in the center of the temple, she finds the water. It's a 10-foot pool, black as ink, lit by candles with a young man in a silvery cloak, weeping softly. Ah, the silver cloaks, of course. In Queen's Landing, he dips his fingers into the water, taking them back out and sucking his fingers. Arya's like, I guess he's thirsty. And there are cups around the water, so Arya fills one and brings it to him, and he stares at her kind of weird, and then says, Valar Morghulis. And she responds, Valar Dohaeris. For a moment, she thinks that the man's gonna fall, but then there's a dark stain below his belt that begins to spread, and he crawls toward an alcove, and Arya realizes, like, oh, there are people sleeping in the alcoves, and she's like, wait, no, they're dead, or they're dying.
My god, this chapter, like, devolves into horror so quickly. It's amazing. What a spectacle. It's so gross, and I love it. And even, like, how sad is that vision? Like, the man sitting there, dipping his fingers into the pool because he's, like, playing with the idea of dying. He's sucking
death.
At it. Yeah, like, exactly what I was thinking, dude. That's literally it. That's what they make. Duh.
Well, no, they make that, but it's clear, right? It looks like water.
Right.
Unless you think it... I think that they make multiple drinks here.
Interesting.
There's
I
this
think
thing.
this is one, yeah. Well, I just wonder if this is like the clarified, purified version of the weirwood paste and the shade of the evening together, and if you like boil it out enough.
Like
I thought
the
we
ghee
didn't we talk at the
of
top of the episode that we don't want to talk about drugs? I feel like
these are legal. This is part
these
of
are
the state. This
street
is.
drugs out here. These are not legal drugs, Eliana.
No, this is part of their government system in Braavos.
Is that why they call it the Free Cities? Because they're cooking fucking super meth?
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Jesus. I love Arya's character beat here, though. It follows up from Stony Sept, right? When she gave water to the men in the cages because she was trying to help them. She was trying to show them mercy, but here she is showing mercy in a much different way without even knowing it. And also, really lucky that she's seeing it happen first and that she didn't just stroll in and go, "Oh, I'm so thirsty."
I know, right? Because I'm like, oh God, would anyone have stopped her? I don't know. Probably
It's been a
not.
long trip, I mean.
Yeah, that is really awkward. You can't just have that like that there. There has to be like someone's got to warn
A
people when
sign.
they enter. Yeah. Especially because
Oh,
like
if only there were warning signs when you enter the House of Black and White that this place is creepy and maybe you shouldn't drink their water. If only there were signs. Could it be the
Yeah.
secret handshake to get in? What about the man you're about to meet with the worm in his eye?
Yeah, but he didn't enter. He didn't tell her right away. He waited until like she could have had all these opportunities to drink first. But
Well, it's a test.
anyway, cupbearer shit, right? She's got that cupbearer role. Now she's really doing it.
Again, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just like a big part of her story. Also, I just think it's so funny that, she's like, "Oh my God, you're stabbed." And the guy just like probably doesn't respond to her because he's like, no shit, but also he just doesn't understand what she's saying at all. Just like, holy shit, you're stabbed. And that's
There's
really
even like,
awkward. He like looked at her all
it's.
weird, like, wow, she's like, go on, fucking do it. Fucking do it, sir.
Poor guy.
You
You know,
coward,
he
kill
was just
yourself.
deciding how to do it.
I
Damn,
know.
that's so cruel. Well, and there's almost even some Tyrion vibes about it, right? Like accidentally
Yeah.
poisoning someone from a goblet.
Or, yeah, that's true. Or even intentionally. And I mean, even Tyrion, right? There's an aspect in which he's kind of like, he's going through a time where he's trying to drink himself to death a little.
Yeah.
He also
Makes me
crossed the
think of
Narrow Sea just now.
Tears of Lys, right?
Oh, yeah.
As
Yeah.
well. Lots going on here. Lots happening. Well, as Arya has her first foray here in the House of Black and White, a gaunt-looking girl grabs her, and Arya's like, "Don't grab me. The last person who grabbed me died." And the girl says some words Arya doesn't know, and Arya's like, "Do you know the common tongue?" And a voice behind her says, "I do, but it's not the waif. It's a tall, hooded man wearing a black and white robe that matches the waif's." Beneath his cowl, all she could see was the faint red glitter of candlelight reflecting off his eyes. What a good build-up.
Oh,
He.
it's like an echo of the imagery of the Titan. I see it.
He tells her that she's safe here. This is the House of the Black and White, the many-faced god's temple. Arya asks if the many-faced god is like the seven-faced one, but the man tells her he has as many faces as stars in the sky. "But at the end of the day, every road stands him of many faces waiting. He will be there for you one day, do not fear. You need not rush to his embrace."
So there's a couple of things going on here. I like this line here of this, there's a, the many-faced god has as many faces as stars in the sky. It makes me wonder if it's a reference from George to a short story by Arthur C. Clarke called The 9 Billion Names of God, which I read in a compilation of sci-fi short stories, which is the first time I ever read George, and I didn't realize it was him. Again, it was Sand Kings. And in that story, I'm gonna just fucking spoil the whole last short story, whatever. They're trying to figure out the 9 billion names of God, and I think there's supposed to be as many as there are stars in the sky, and then each star starts blinking out once their computer finishes calculating it. Anyways, so wonder if it's reference to that, but also I love this idea of the stars as faces, because this is a chapter that opens with Arya thinking about stars, right? And this idea of the star of home. And I'm now thinking of like home is faces for Arya, right? When she thinks of Winterfell and home at the beginning of the chapter, she's not thinking of like the castle. She's not thinking of the physical place and wanting to go there. The last place that she wanted to go to was Eastwatch, because at Eastwatch is Jon, right? Home wasn't about the castle for her, but the people, and she's mourning them this chapter.
Oh, wow. Poor Arya, having to find a new home. That's terrible. And that she wants to go to her people.
Yeah,
Whoa.
and she's like, she keeps being like, all these people are dead. They're all dead. And I'm like, no, Arya, only 25% of the people that you just named are dead.
She's really taking her mom's mantle on there.
Actually, yeah. All these people are alive. There's hope.
Do you know the song by the Ting Tings?
Yeah, I
That's not
do.
my name.
I
Well,
do.
I want to commit to the bit here, and
I think I saw them live once.
Arya tells the kindly man that she came here to find Jaqen and that he gave her this iron coin. But the kindly man doesn't know this Jaqen and asks her name, like the Ting Ting song, instead. And she tells him they call her Salty, Salty from Salt Pans. But he says, no, tell me your name. She answers Squab. She tells him Weasel. She tells him Ari. That's not her name. That's not
That's
her
not her
name.
name.
Yeah, thank you. That's going to be in your head all day now.
Oh,
Congrats.
amazing, beautiful. Yeah, that actually was stuck in my head a lot back then. Yeah, that song only came out a few years before Adowida, if you really think about it. It
Oh,
came
I'm
out in
really
between
thinking
Feast
about
and
it.
Adowida. Anyways, so yeah, that song is going to be a bonus track from, after we release our Robert's Rebellion musical.
Oh my God.
And yeah, I mean, they let her stay here at this place. To do so, she just shows them the iron coin, and I'm just like, I don't know, did Jaqen just give her like a tuition fee and boarding fee? Like, it's interesting. Like, she pays for a lot of things with this one tiny ass little coin. She pays for passage across the sea with it.
Yeah, that coin's pretty good. It's
And
got some weight. Who knew that the faceless dollar was up so high?
yeah, for real though. She like bought a lot of things with this. It's not necessarily the things she wanted to buy, but she bought a whole ass like several school years with it. And you were saying earlier, like, how do they know to expect Arya? And like, maybe it's magic, but also I'm like, did Jaqen like write back and was like, I would like to put in a recommendation for this student to join our school,
Yeah.
our University of Death.
Or does the coin transmit memory or something? Is
Ooh.
it made of something? Is there some sort of magic around it?
Interesting. Actually, maybe there could be. But yeah, there's this whole like stripping away, undressing of names, that Arya goes through until the last one. They're gonna be like, you don't got a name anymore. You're no one. Nothing. Haha. But anyways, he pushes her to tell him her real name, and she goes, fear cuts deeper than swords, she thinks. I am Arya of House Stark.
You are, but the House of Black and White is no place for Arya of House Stark.
Please, I have no place to go.
Do you fear death?
No.
Let us see. The priest lowered his cowl. Beneath he had no face, only a yellowed skull with a few scraps of skin still clinging to the cheeks, and a white worm wriggling from one empty eye socket. Kiss me, child. He croaked in a voice as dry and husky as a death rattle.
Does he think to scare me? Arya kissed him where his nose should be and plucked the grave worm from his eye to eat it, but it melted like a shadow in her hand. The yellow skull was melting too, and the kindliest old man that she had ever seen was smiling down at her.
No one has ever tried to eat my worm before. Are you hungry, child?
Yes, she thought, but not for food. I'm just sad that the worm melted away. Arya has been trying to eat worms this entire story. Just let her fucking eat the worms, okay? Just let Arya eat the worms. She's a Tully, she's a fish, they eat worms. That's all she fucking wants to do. Also, she tries to kiss where his nose should be. Again, feels a little like Tyrion, but in terms of the imagery, but just, I don't know. Let Arya eat the fucking worms if she wants to.
I love that callback to her class chapters. And of course, like knowledge, the worm and the apple, etc. Eating the worm. I also want to say that I looked at a high-res picture of a grave worm because I didn't really know what it looked like in my head. Not the band grave worm, a literal worm from graves. And, whoa, man, I don't know that I could eat that worm. This kid is metal.
I want to see it.
Yeah, Google it yourself at your own peril. I'm not into this.
Interesting.
Like, I'm going to level with you all. I could probably eat a regular worm. I think that the texture could be like oysters. Like, I eat a lot of sashimi and oysters, so I think I could figure it out. You know, I feel like at the end of the day, if I could rinse it, maybe I could eat a worm. But this little guy has lots of like little hair, legs, and like pincers, and it's not the kind of worm that I could eat. I could not do it. I will not do it. It grosses me out. So Arya, you are a metal little kid. I really commend you.
How big are these? You know, like, yeah, these are not the most appetizing looking worms. I feel like, you know, earthworms like look like. They look promising. They look like they could be a little tasty, you know?
They just got that nice little squishy texture. Like, I could, yeah, if it went bad, I could just swallow it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly. But I don't know. South. The grave worms, not so much. Like, maybe if they were cooked, right? They look a little like a variation of like mealworms. Mealworms. Yep. Yeah. And I've had a mealworm, and it was like the lightest little Cheeto I've ever had.
Oh. Wow.
It was small. It was really small. So
no, I get it, because like I like fried shrimp or fried crab, you know, like, yeah. I like the tail, you know, it's crunchy, it's yum yum yum. I don't know how big they are, and I'm not gonna look or find out, so enjoy. Someone at home can tell us. I'm done.
Lobsters are like giant cockroaches. That's true.
You just have to change your state of mind is all.
Yeah, there's that song that I put on my Arya Stark playlist of, if God didn't want us to snort worms, he wouldn't have made them round. And that's how Arya feels.
Oh my god. Of course, you got the life, death, and the rebirth angle of worms, right? Here she is, born again, a brand new character once more. Her pomegranate, in a way, right? Arya, she gets offered a worm instead of a pomegranate, where Sansa gets offered a pomegranate. And Arya takes it. Sansa
let her eat the worm.
Yeah. You know, I want to also bring up, it kind of makes me think of Nidagger, the Dreadbiter or Midgard's worm in Norse mythology. It's basically like there's a third root of Yggdrasil at the still point of the Turning World that stretched over their underworld, like basically like a giant worm. And the dragon Nidug ate it. Or ate at it, tried to eat at it to destroy creation. And that's what made the beautiful ever-circling Ouroboros imagery. And that created the oceans. So if anyone ever took the tail out of the dragon's mouth, they believed disaster would fall. And Midgard's worm dies at Ragnarok.
Huh.
That's what it ends. But yeah, very interesting. It kind of reminded me a little bit of that, especially with all the roots and all the like, all this kind of like old architecture and stuff that maybe subconsciously or consciously or magically or presciently connects to all these other portals of the world.
Yeah, which may be actually portals, unsure as we floated, but
it's the Avengers portal scene.
Yes, no, exactly. Maybe.
And
but
in the end of The Winds of Winter, everyone is going to use these portals to get out of Winterfell.
Oh my god. That was the 5-year gap. The blip. So, yeah, maybe if these people had apples, the worm couldn't really fuck them up. That's what it sounds like you're telling me from earlier today. This chapter ends with Arya saying that she is hungry, right? But not for food. And it's this whole thing of consumption that has been going throughout this chapter. Like, you brought up the Titan, but also as Arya enters the House of Black and White, she's like, I don't know. I guess that guy's thirsty. He's just like really staring at that pool of water and licking it off his fingers. So you have this contrast between hunger and thirst. And I'm seeing hunger as like this sort of like desire for life, the way that it's portrayed in the story, right? Like hunger and that eating is what sustains you. We see it with Bran's story where they're like, Bran, you gotta fucking eat. And then thirst and drinking, it ends up showing up here as this sort of like death drive, if you will. And both are sides of destruction in different ways, like hunger, again, appetite, violence. We see it with the way that the wolves work, right? They're hungry, they're visceral, they're tearing things apart. And thirst ends up kind of being this elimination of the self. We see it again, like here at the House of Black and White, we see it in Tyrion's story and the way that he's kind of just really fallen into his cups. but both are destruction. Both are kind of oblivion.
I love that because it's kind of like the two sides of the coin or the two sides of the door.
Oh, yes, the door. Wait, doors actually do have two sides if you think about it, unless they're revolving. No, even revolving doors kind of have only two sides as they go around. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Not where no, I was taking it, no, but I appreciate I didn't think the about sentiment. It,
but doors really do have two sides, and so it does work with the coin.
Yeah, I meant more like the ebony and the weirwood part of the door, but but it works. Yes, yes, it
I
is
know,
1-1
but I just
as well.
Didn't think about it.
Thankfully, it's the same on both sides, I believe. So I don't know, but I'm guessing so.
Some doors might not be. You know, they got the carving, anyways.
And I also love that. The hunger that games. He's asking her about, the Hunger Games, oh my god. The hunger he's asking her about isn't just, you know, like, are you hungry? But it's also, as we see in this chapter, she has a hunger for home, for knowledge, and hunger for vengeance, and the tools and training to get her there, to get it. She's yes. here now for her Jedi training monologue, take 4.
Yeah. Wait,
3,
yeah, it's take 4,
2.5,
isn't it?
I mean.
Fuck.
I guess, like, each one has been a halfie, you know what I mean? So maybe it's take 2, 2.5?
I don't even know. I've lost track, but yeah. And I like what you were saying there of that hunger for vengeance. This book kind of ends with
fire
that.
Fire and blood.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But also, especially, like you said, hunger for home. Big sad.
Yeah, she's comparing every bit of this place to Winterfell and even smells snow and pine needles and stew. Which might be her smelling something magically, a magical memory.
What if, okay, throwing it out there, what if the smell is also incense from those trees so that everyone has, like, pleasant memories of whatever the fuck it is as they die?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I think that could be it. That's, yeah, that could be it. That makes sense.
I liked our earlier idea when we were like, what if they're mixing the drugs?
I like all of it. I mean, they use all parts of the tree in this household is
wow.
what I'm saying.
Wow.
Wow.
Because they're hungry.
And that is, I think, where we're going to leave you all with doors and trees. Those are really big for us in this episode, I feel like. And hunger.
And the story. I feel like those are pretty big parts of the story as well, in general.
Yeah.
Trees yeah. and doors. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Good job.
We did it. We're in Feast. I love it. We'll be back for Feast 2.
Oh, hunger because feast.
She has a hunger to feast vengefully. Yeah, we'll be back with A Feast for Crows next week for you. Keep your eyes and ears on the feed, and we look forward to Arya 2.
Yeah.
Feast Boogaloo.
Yes, we have Arya 2 next time. The Arya chapter slap. In Feast, in Braavos. Stay tuned for when those come out by following us on social media. You can find us on twitter.com/girlsgonecanon. That's CANON. Or on Blue Sky as Girls Gone Canon. Or you can send us an email. Maybe you want to tell us something. You can email us at girlsgonecanon@gmail.com.
And of course, we are so lucky that our patrons bless us with their presence over at patreon.com/girlsgonecanon, CANON. Patrons have many, many perks, and they're going to tell you about some of that, as well as where to find us.
You can catch Girls Gone Canon on any of the following streamers.
On Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast, Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Audible, and Amazon Podcasts.
You can also join us on Patreon, where if you join the Thunder tier above, you have access to a Discord and monthly happy hours and things like that.
And by joining the Discord, you get access to a bunch of great channels, including but not limited to memes and shitposting channel, Fashion Hour. There are multiple channels for historic materials, A Song of Ice and Fire. There's a pets channel, which I think is probably the most important channel of all. Respectful Thirsting, because there's a channel for that. Come by, join the community. It's a lot of fun, and you won't regret it.
We'll return to you next week. Thank you for listening. I have been one of your hosts, Chloe.
And I have been another one of your hosts, Eliana.
That's all, folks.
Yeah, goodbye. Go eat worms. Don't do drugs.
Go eat worms. Don't do drugs.
That's it.
We are an anti-drug podcast. Goodbye.
Never done drugs. Bye.